Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 23 of Could It Be Podcast, where today we're sharing Lauren's story. Now, before we get into today's episode, just a bit of a different announcement. I'm traveling from Adelaide to Austin, Texas for the South by Southwest Festival. I'll be helping out an Adelaide band called Dean Forever with some backing vocals, which is actually the band that my partner Jacob, who does the intro to this podcast, has created. So if you're in the Austin area in Texas and you want to catch up with me, reach out. I'm on the Facebook, the Instagram, YouTube, comment on a video if you need to, if you're not on other social media platforms. But yeah, I'd love to catch up with anyone that's around for the festival or who lives in the area. So yeah, please, please reach out if you're around there. Now, Lauren, at the time of recording this episode, she was about a week and a half out from her explant surgery. She's now had that surgery, so I'm looking forward to having her on for another episode, hopefully soon, just so that she can give us a bit of an update as to how she's feeling. Lauren's a massive advocate for disability. She does talk about how she has multiple other conditions that she lives with every day, and she's another example of an amazing woman who just shows so much strength in, you know, still advocating for people who are suffering, even though she's going through so much herself. I really enjoyed recording this episode with Lauren and, in regular contact with her, because she's just the kind of person that if she lived here in Adelaide, she'd totally be my bestie. Sorry, Lauren, if that's not the same way that you feel, but no, we had a really good time recording this episode. And I really hope that you enjoy part one of Lauren's story.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Could It Be Podcast. We've got a very special guest again on today, and it's somebody who hasn't explanted yet. So we're having a pre-explant episode together this evening, and we'll hopefully have Lauren on many times after this to share how she's feeling after her explant. So welcome to the show, Lauren.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to have a chat to you.
It's exciting to have you here. We did a few blooper reels at the start, having a bit of a giggle, so we got there eventually. So first of all, tell us a little bit about yourself and where you're joining me from today.
So I am coming from Western Australia. I live here in a little cute beachside community with my Whippet Lawson. And I have a background in mental health and community services, but unfortunately I'm not working at the moment due to disability. So, yes.
Tell us your initial reason for getting breast implants.
Hard question. But I was diagnosed with, congenital mammary hyperplasia. I didn't actually know that that was a diagnosis till this year. I basically thought that I just never developed. I came from a family where I've got two sisters and a mum who all had a D cup, and there was me. Yep. That's wonderful, isn't it? I just never developed. I was like an A. And I went to the doctor. I went through puberty when you were meant to develop and grow, and then all your friends around you are getting these like giant boobs and you're basically having the chest of a 12-year-old boy. My doctor said that there was pretty much nothing that they could do. The only options were get breast implants due to the abnormality, or that I could wait and have a baby later in life and then see if that actually, yeah, if that actually promoted some kind of growth there. But, so those were the options I was given at 19. Right.
Like, I've been told the same thing with my endometriosis, like, oh, go have a baby and it'll go away. Like, right. At that age, you're still finding out who you are as a person. Like,
yeah,
like, you might not want them, you might not be able to have them, like, that I can't believe that they told you that.
I know, especially, like, so, my surgery happened when I was 19, but this was an ongoing thing for years, like, me trying to figure out, like, what's wrong with me, why aren't I growing, why am I so, like, small there, and to be told that, I think I was, like, 16, like, either have a baby or have breast implants, I'm 16, I'm a kid, like, I don't I'm not thinking of having a baby. And to be told that those are the only options, probably wasn't the most professional thing to say to someone, but
no, when I was 16, I was thinking about rolling around the streets in my Gemini, cranking like pop punk, like not relationships or boyfriends, let alone babies. Goodness me.
I was definitely not thinking about any of that stuff. Like you said, yeah. So, I don't know. So that's how we got into that. But, my brain is like, she's not cooperating right now. So
no, that's cool. So was it 19? Like, were you 19 when you ended up having the breast implants?
Yeah. So the first, I've had two. Mm-hmm. First surgery, I was 19, and I went in for like the pre-op and met with the surgeon, and the only things he said to me, being, you know, so young, I remember my mum coming with me and we were asking, so what's like the ongoing maintenance? What does this entail? Are there any risks? Is Lauren a good candidate for this surgery? I remember all he said to me was, there are some questions as to whether breast implants are the right choice if you're someone who has an autoimmune disease. But other than that, there are no problems. So he did say that, but at that time I wasn't diagnosed with any autoimmune disease because I was, you know, this stuff didn't happen till later on. But he didn't really go into it. He kind of skirted over it and then proceeded to show us the durability of the implants that he... Yeah.
Yeah.
I got the whole, the gummy bear.
Yeah.
So like doing the whole cutting it in half, talking about how there's risk of bleeding or like leaking with saline implants, but not with these incredible silicon gummy bears. And yeah, did the whole cutting them in half, stuck them back together. And that was it. Like, I don't remember any real conversations other than that. And with the time frame, I think he did say it's recommended to change them every 10 years, but I've got patients that I saw 20 or 30 odd years ago with their same first pair, like, you'll be fine. It's like a rarity that happens nowadays. Women generally don't change them out. So that was the information I was given at 19 about them.
That's such a differing opinion, like, to what I hear. Like, I've heard people having them for 30 to 40 years in the Facebook groups. And I'm like, what? Like, are they not rocks at that point?
No, as well, like, what we know now, obviously, about, like, being in a body which has changing temperatures and fluid and, like, all the continuous movement and strain on those things, how can you think that it's going to last, you know, 20 or 30 years? It's crazy, but... I don't know. Yeah, that's what we were told.
Wow. Very interesting that he mentioned the, like, this is 2009, mentioning it's not recommended that people get it if they've got an autoimmune, like, something must have been, like, you know, they must have been talking about it in the medical world at that point.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that angers me, because it was, like, skirted over really fast. He just said, there are some questions whether... they pose problems if you do have an autoimmune disease, but you haven't been diagnosed with any of that. They didn't look for any of that at that stage. Otherwise, I probably would have, my Crohn's would have been picked up, because I definitely had that since childhood. There wasn't any kind of, well, this is what you need to look out for, or these are the potential issues that can arise. Nothing like that at all. So didn't really think too much of it. I thought, like, I'm 19 and I want boobs, and he's saying that they're great and, you know, look how beautiful they look and all that. So, yeah, you don't think about it, do you?
No, exactly. So how did you feel after you had the first lot of implants? Like, how did you feel about yourself? How was your recovery?
My gosh. I, like, my first pair, I truly loved them, and... obviously I got them for mental health reasons, as well as the congenital abnormalities, you know, not being able to develop because of the lack of breast tissue and things like that. But my confidence, you know, like, I felt, I don't remember the recovery being too difficult on the first round, and I confidence had improved, but it only took, I think, 2 years for problems to really get to the point where I needed another surgery. Basically, one dropped. I think it was this one. I can't remember now. I think it was my left side dropped. So one was up here, and then one was suddenly like down there.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, and so I had, I didn't know what had happened. I found out later that in the initial surgery, they had removed too much muscle because they had to create a pocket to put these implants in. None of this was discussed, so I, you know, like the procedures for the actual surgery and what it entails and what they do. So I just noticed that my boob was hanging lower and I was in a lot of pain. But I think they sent me off for like an MRI and everything and was told, you know, there's no ruptures, there's no problems. You know, one has significantly distended. There is a difference, but we can't see any internal problems as to why. I did find out later it's because like I said, they created too much of a pocket and it couldn't hold the weight of the implant. So then that's when I needed the second surgery. And then since then, looking back, I had problems like straight away, but because I was so young and these were like my first introduction to any intense medical procedure, I didn't know that it was abnormal to have all these problems. So I just thought like, that's what happens when you have an invasive major surgery.
What kind of problems did you notice? And when would you say that they started, like looking back?
So the second surgery, I think that was the beginning of 2014, I think, is when I finally got in. So I had a few years with those problems and then had the replacement. This is where the red flags should have risen because it started before the actual surgery. But again, I was young and trusted the surgeon. I remember him telling me that they were initially only going to replace the one that had dropped. Then I found out on the morning of the procedure that they decided to do both after they had already operated. He came in and told me. They also told me that I think that you're supposed to have the implants in a solution to kill off all the germs, you know, prior to implanting for, I think it's around 12 hours, if I'm not mistaken. So because they were initially planning on only doing the one, that one got the 12 hour in the solution to kill off all the germs and bacteria. At the last minute, they did decide to do both. And they only sterilized the second implant for 2 hours. He told me that after the surgery when I woke up. So right then I should have been like, well, that's a problem. That doesn't sound like, you know, a proper protocol or procedure. But, you know, he said it shouldn't cause much of an issue. They'll just chuck me on some antibiotics. And then I found out later that they had also changed from, I think my initial implants were 320 cc's. The second pair were 330 or 230. And I wasn't made aware that they were actually going up a size. So that was another thing. Very quickly after that second surgery, I had a really severe infection. I think you're supposed to stay like 1 to 2 nights in hospital after implants. I stayed, I think it was a few months, actually.
Wow.
Yeah. Because of the severity of this infection. That they couldn't really control. And then I was sent home. And I just remember months and months of, like, they were healing, they were looking okay, just months and months, though, of, like, intense pain. But again, I thought, you know, well, I've just had, like, two boob surgeries. It's a pretty invasive surgery. I did have this infection. Maybe that's why. And, like, I'm not used to having, you know, big boobs. Maybe that's just what it feels like to have such big boobs when you go from like an A to a well, I was only a C, but for me, yeah, massive difference. So just ongoing and ongoing. And then it all came to a head one night when I was at home I think I had had a fever for a few days, just randomly. This was months after the second surgery. And I started turning, like, red everywhere. So, like, from my toes, all up my legs, up my arms, my chest, my face, just went really bright red, and my skin went really thick and swollen. I didn't know what that was. My sister, who was home at the time, saw me and was like, something's not right. I started not being able to breathe. So they were frantically, my family was trying to, like, get ready to take me to the hospital. I remember passing out, and then we ended up getting me to the hospital, where I had cellulitis and Redman syndrome diagnosed. So basically, yeah, like a massive infection had still been taking place the whole time.
Okay.
And I was put a PICC line, which is inserted into an artery near your heart. And I stayed hooked up to this PICC line, which pumped antibiotics for, I think it was like 6 months, so they could kind of squash the infection. It was like really insane. So that was my initial few years introduction to having breast implants.
Not a nice introduction, by the sounds of
no.
it. Wow.
Not at all. So, like, it was really, like I said, there were like a lot of red flags, and I think signs that my body just, like, I don't like this. This is not supposed to be in here. I'm not coping with this. But because I was so young and none of this had been explained, like, as potential risks to what could happen, I know it sounds so silly, but, like, I just didn't know any better.
I was the same age as you. I completely understand. Like, I was 19.
Yeah.
I went through tissue expanders first to grow the shape. Yeah. Because, like, that, then you've got the risk of stretching the skin too quickly, which sounds like maybe something they should have done with you instead of, like, gouging out your chest muscles. But yeah, 19, like, mum was doing a lot of the talking for me, and mum was coming from a place of care. She knew that it was something that really, like, I was bullied for being flat-chested in school. I was very self-conscious about it. So she was coming from a place of care going, look, if you don't like this, you can fix it. I understand being young and not knowing what to ask. Like, that's a big thing. Like, nowadays I would definitely go, okay, like, is there another option here? Like, what can I think, what can I do instead? But when you're 19, you don't think that way. You're like, I'm going to have boobs. I'm going to look and feel normal.
Yeah. I'm not going to be, like, teased, you know, like, all the positives, like you said, you're 19, you're impressionable, you're young. You don't really have much life experience in the way of, you know, health adversities or problems because you're young, you know, healthy and all that. So you just kind of take people at their word. And if they're not volunteering that information, like, these are the problems or these are the things you need to look out for, you're not going to go and, like, look up that kind of thing or press. You're just going to be happy at your new boobs and, like, how good you look.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how did you end up hearing about breast implant illness, and what are your symptoms?
So I think my first intro to breast implant illness was in 2019 when I got diagnosed with Crohn's disease. Like I said, I think I've had that since I was a kid, but it just kind of remained dormant and in remission for many years, only having flare-ups now and then. So I didn't think too much of it. But 2019, I was working two jobs. I got really sick, so, like, really intense fatigue. I couldn't stay awake at work. I couldn't complete my shifts that I was doing before. Every time I ate, I was in, like, pain. I couldn't keep food down. I basically had just, like, a whole immune system shut down really quickly. And I remember basically withdrawing from, like, all my friends, and I lost my job because of my illness at the time. And I remember making a post on my Facebook just, like, months later when it was diagnosed that I had Crohn's, letting people know. And this woman that I used to be quite close with, I remember her commenting, like, have you thought about breast implant illness. Like, have you heard about this? This could be contributing to your symptoms. And at the time, I was like, well, no, I've got Crohn's. Don't be silly. Like, I don't think that that's a thing, considering what I'm experiencing. You know, this is, I'm told this is why, this is the root of my problems. You know, surely it's not my breast implants. That can't be anything to do with any of this. So I kind of brushed it off. And because I hadn't ever heard anything about it before, I put it down to just being one of those, you know, like, yeah, like not a real thing.
I think we all do that for a little while because it's that denial stage of the grief cycle. That's what I put it down to. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Because you don't want to think like something that you willingly participated in or that you chose to do to yourself, obviously not knowing, but you don't want to think that you had any kind of input in your health getting so bad. It's a horrible feeling to be like, oh, like, have I done this to myself? Yeah, it's not very nice. So, yeah, of course not. No. The symptoms, though, compared to then, have gotten a lot worse. But I have a lot of symptoms now, a lot of which I do think are attributed to BII, but I don't know the extent because, as I said, I do have some autoimmune diseases. I don't know what the crossover is. The main ones that I experience are fatigue and not just I'm tired or I've been running around, you know, I've got to take a nap or do this. Like I'm basically at the point now where I'm bedbound most days and housebound on my good days. So I don't leave my house. I think the last time I went out and for like a social activity was July 2022. Every other time I've left the house since then has been like a doctor's appointment or a hospital appointment. So I don't, yeah, fatigue that is completely debilitating. Joint pain to the point that I feel like an 80-year-old lady. I'm sure you can relate. Yeah,
I understand that completely. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Hair loss. I have been diagnosed with alopecia, but like hair loss all to the sides here. It's falling out daily at like a ridiculous rate. People might look at me and be like, "You've got such lovely hair," but yeah, I used to have a lot more. So that's quite distressing. Brain fog. A lot of the times, I can't articulate myself and. Like, you know, the words you want to say or how you want to express yourself, but
they're not there. Like, you can't pull them from anywhere when that brain fog's kicking in.
Yeah, that's it. It's really bad. So, and that's exacerbated on any time I have to, like, exert myself, like, or any time I'm fatigued, the brain fog is just, like, so much worse. Acne, like, severe acne that I've had to go on a year's course of Accutane to kind of control it. Breathlessness, chest pain all the time, insomnia, facial angioedema, so like random swelling of my lips. My cheeks are a bit puffy still, but just like random swelling. They can't give me a trigger or like tell me what I'm allergic to. It just sporadically happens, as well as like rashes on my chest and my arms. Mm-hmm. What else? My gosh, lightheadedness. Blurred vision, vertigo, loss of balance, bruising all the time. Yeah, there are so many, but those are just the ones that kind of stand out. So
yeah, interesting you mentioned bruising, that's great. Like, but interesting that you do mention it. Zoe, who I like, we're releasing an episode shortly. She messaged me after we recorded her episode. She's like, oh, I forgot to mention, I do go through, like, I was bruising really randomly at the smallest things after having my implants, but that stopped since explanting. So I'll let her know you mention that because, you know, so that she knows that, you know, that's not just her that's experienced that. Like,
oh my gosh, yeah, like definitely. I'd love to know how she's going because it's bizarre. Like even I'll get them randomly on my boobs as well, like just bruises. Mm. And I'm not doing anything. Like I'm not hitting people with my chest or like, you know.
Chest bumping people when you see them in public.
I'm not doing anything strenuous at this stage. Like I can't even be active or work out. So, yeah, it's just like random things that have no – there's just no reason for them. So yeah, but let me know how she's going because yes. I'd be interested.
Yeah, they've stopped. Like the bruises have cleared up for sure. Yeah, since she's explanted, and she explanted in August last year.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. So, it's been positive for her. So fingers crossed for you as well, because that'd be like, you know, when you're younger and you're like, you know, used to go out partying and you'd have those random bruises when you wake up the next day going, what did I do to achieve that?
That was a fun.
But now it's like, you know, when you can't even go anywhere and you don't even have a fun excuse for those bruises, like.
Yeah, I know. I just, honestly, I'm like an elderly lady in a 33-year-old body. It's just, yeah. So my explant is scheduled for Friday next week, the 17th. It was originally scheduled for, I believe, the 22nd, but they were able to bring it forward with my persistent ringing and calling.
Love that.
Love that. And letters from GP, like, so I'm really looking forward to that, and the nerves are definitely creeping in, but also the excitement and actually having some hope, like, this might not be my future, so that's, you know, a really nice feeling to actually have something to look forward to.
Yeah, I'll keep my fingers crossed that, you know, you see some amazing results, like, you know, pretty soon after the surgery. But we were talking just before we hit record, and we understand the reality of it's not going to be all rainbows and butterflies the moment you wake up, but, you know, hopefully you do start to see some improvements straight away.
Thank you. I'm not, like, I'm definitely not expecting miracles. Like, I realize I am actually, you know, I'm really sick. I do have a history of other things going on. I don't know what's attributed to what, but just with all the information now, like all the women you spoke to, your own experience, all the information we're seeing now, the fact that my GP actually, you know, acknowledges that this is a problem, it's on the FDA website that these are things you can experience, I am hoping for some kind of, you know, alleviation of these symptoms or some difference. I'm sure it will happen.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So also before we hit record, you were telling me that you've gone through the public health system here in Australia to go through your explant. That's something that I don't know a lot about. So sort of tell me what procedure you went through to get onto that list and how long it's taken you, what you went through to get there.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. I didn't realise that this was an option. As you know, explant surgeries can be very, very costly. I think majority of the women I see having to pay private, it's costing them around like 16 to 17 grand. I don't know about you. Most people, I feel, and me included, don't really have like that kind of just hanging around for a rainy day in your bank account. So I was looking, I guess, for other options and other things that might be available to me because I needed these to come out. Luckily, my GP, being the one who raised the alarm last year after the extensive testing we've had, you know, to test me for all these other conditions, she did say, look, I think that you do have breast implant illness. Let's find out about your, implant information and see what we can do there. Turns out mine actually are recalled. So they're on the recall list.
Do you know what kind they were? Like, I'm happy for you to say if you know which one.
Yes. I know that, is it Allergan are the big ones that everyone, I know that there's a lot of information around them being recalled. Mine are Mentol gummy bears. I can't remember the model, but I know that if you go on, I'll have to try to find it. There is a site for Australia and like the implants that are circulating within Australia, and they have a list. Sorry.
Dr. Mary Ling over in New South Wales has a list on her website. I'll link to that. Okay. And then if you do find the one that you've seen, I can pop that in the show notes for anyone.
But
It's hard to know because, like, I had to chase it up and go back to my first specialist, or the one that actually explanted, but this was after I explanted that I was finding some information out. Apparently we get a card when we have implants that have the serial numbers. Yeah. I don't remember ever receiving that. Maybe Mum did. I don't know. I had to get the exact reference number, Google that, and even that wasn't 100% clear. I emailed the actual company to find out, and they confirmed that they were.
Yeah, good on you for being so proactive. Because it is hard. Like I do remember getting my little card, but I think like it's lost somewhere in like the stacks of my medical paperwork. I've got years and years of like testing results and things like that, and I've looked, I can't find it. So yeah, I had to do the whole Freedom of Information Act to acquire all my medical history, and that's how I found out. But then I also found out that I actually got a recall letter in 2019 sent out to me. I don't have it here. I just found it because when I requested all my information, it came as part of that. I don't remember actually getting that letter in 2019 to say that mine were recalled then. Might have saved me some time had I known. But that's how. And so I got a referral into the public system from my GP to my initial plastic surgeon who performed the two surgeries. That referral is actually still pending. They haven't accepted that. So that was, I think, October last year that was sent in. I haven't actually seen them. What I was able to do, thanks to some of the ladies in one of the support groups I'm in online, is find a surgeon in WA who does private and public. So I got a referral from my GP to see her, and I think I paid the initial out-of-pocket cost to see her privately, and then after an examination with her, she told me that because I think I've got capsular contracture in one of them, and I do have other problems, and mine are recalled, that I do qualify for public removal. And so that's how we've got kind of gotten around this. So all I've had to pay, I think, to see her initial fee for a consult was $200, and that's all I'm paying, and the rest now is public, and I've gone through the public system. So I think, yeah, I saw her, like I said, back in October, and now my surgery is in February this year. So
That's not too
it's been
bad,
pretty quick.
really. I think there was a surgeon here, like a private surgeon here in Adelaide, that I was looking to see, and
Yeah.
just to get an appointment with him was that long. Like it was February to August.
Yeah.
So like that's not bad. Like, I'm glad that that's an option because, like you said, it is pricey and
Yeah.
not everyone has that money lying around. And if they do, like at the moment with the way that housing and expenses are otherwise, like who has that money that if they've got it in savings, like they don't necessarily want to spend it on that something that could be done without an out-of-pocket cost. So, yeah.
Exactly that as well. Something that, you know, there's a lot of money to spend on something that you're not guaranteed necessarily a result for, either you don't know, if it is going to help, and then afterwards you've still got recovery, so you can't go straight back to work after something like this. You know, someone might be lucky and have a partner or family who's happy to pitch in and to help with income, but not like that. I mean, I yeah, if I had to pay out of pocket, this wouldn't be happening. You know, I don't have a partner. It's just me. I can't work because of, the extent of my illnesses causing disability. So, me even saving up like my medical fees alone as is now, I think I've spent $50,000 on my health since 2019
Oh
with
my
all the testing
goodness.
and medication I require and just like rent and everything. That's my savings. I have nothing to save up to put towards something like this. So if it wasn't for finding this loophole in the public system, and just paying like a one-off fee to see this private surgeon, you know, I don't know what I'd do because, yeah, these need to come out. So I'm sure there are so many other women in the same position as well. So hopefully that's an avenue that other people might be able to look into as well.
Yeah, for sure. I'll see if I can find some links about that online, that, if someone could then take that into their GP to get the referral, because not all GPs are necessarily going to know about that
No.
system as well. So yeah, I'll do some digging and find some information. If you've got anything, feel free to share it as well.
Yeah, I might. I know that there's the surgeon that I'm seeing, and I think that there are actually for WA, there are two more that do the same thing. So I can send that information to you if there's anyone who's like in WA in the same situation, the same predicament.
Amazing, thank you.
And then maybe we can have a look and see if in any of the support groups there are some other doctors. I'm sure that there would be other people in other states doing the same thing. But like you said, it's just not something that's really necessarily well known about. So,
Exactly. So,
yeah.
as a surgeon who's part of that process in the public health system, did you find it did you say she was a female doctor?
She.
Yeah. Did you find that she was quite receptive to talking about breast implant illness, or like what was her opinion on it?
So when I went to see her, she didn't outright say that she believes in breast implant illness, but she was really transparent and blunt and straightforward, which I think is actually a good thing though. Very forthcoming, and just asked me, you know, what I've been experiencing, my medical history. I took the time to explain everything to her. And then at the end of it, which I did appreciate, she just said that, you know, this may not fix all your problems, but, you know, it definitely might. I have had people come in with the same things as you or similar things, and explant has definitely helped them. So she didn't straight out say like, oh yes, it's a thing. I don't know if they can say that because of, you know, the conflicting opinions around BII. But she didn't shoot me down, and she did say, you know, it could definitely help. We just don't know till we get in there and remove it what the state of things are going to be. So, I think I appreciated a more objective opinion. And she did make me feel comfortable to ask questions, which I think is like really important if you're finding a surgeon to do something like this.
Definitely. Has she sort of talked much about what your expectations may be of like how you'll look after the surgery?
She did say, I think because I have a lot of scarring in there, as well, after the first surgery, they did attach some of that awful permacol mesh.
Okay. Yep.
To hold, yeah, so I think that I do have some, it's not just going to be a straightforward, it's going to be some real precision to get everything out. She did say that I might look a little bit deflated. I don't have much natural breast tissue. I'm a C-cup now. I've lost weight since I first got implants, but I'm still a C-cup. I don't really have much of my natural breast tissue at all. If I'm lucky, I think I'm going to be a double A. We'll see. She didn't paint a pretty picture, but at the same time, if it's going to improve my health, like I think that's a risk that I'm going to take. She doesn't perform lifts or anything like that. So she did say, you know, if you're willing to wait, we could refer you to someone else in the public system who might be able to swing a lift in there as well. But that would involve like maybe a year or two of waiting. And I don't have that, the luxury of time on my side with all my symptoms and how sick I am. Mm-hmm. So, and I've seen her work. She's great. Like, you know, I think the important thing about this, and I'm sure you have your own experience with that as well, like when your health is at a point where it's extremely compromised, aesthetics is just not on your,
it's
the top of your priority
anymore, is it? No, it wasn't to me either. And my doctor was kind of brutally honest as well with me too, because I had the deformity before. I was a double A. I went up to a C cup. Like we're like boob sisters. Yeah, she basically said, oh, they're going to look scary to start off with. You're going to have very small boobs. Like, you know, he gave me this warning, and like they were very different when she took the bandages off. One was big, way bigger than the other. The other one was, and I've talked about this in the previous episode, was like, I call it my trauma boob. So I think that she probably had to do a little bit more to get the capsule out or something there. There was a bit more, I was going to say digging, but you said precision and I like that better. There was a lot of precision, I guess. She didn't tell me. But yeah, that, like I had the expectation that I was going to have nothing, and like I've ended up with a C cup. I've put weight on over the years though. And yeah, so like I've ended up, and I you know, they're not perfect still, but I didn't actually like the look of my implants when, like, towards the end anyway. At the start, they were beautiful, but like the last year, I think, like, they just were not nice looking anymore. I didn't feel feminine. Like, I'd lost a lot of feeling in places, so that lost, that made me feel like I lost a bit of femininity. Like, the sense of touch was gone. So yeah, like, but
that happened because I'm interested to know, because I have like a similar thing where like the first few years, or like, I don't know, 5-6 years or whatever, they looked amazing. And then like, did yours change shape, or did you just feel internally like disconnected from them after an amount of time?
I'd say both. They definitely changed shape. And I think, I'm trying to remember when it was, 2011 maybe. Because I remember being at someone's wedding when I noticed like undressing after the wedding when I noticed something, and I'm pretty sure it was like 11/11/11 that they got married. Like that's the only way reason why I think it might be then. But it felt like mine were over the muscle. They were teardrop shaped, and it felt like one of them had flipped. But looking back, I think that's when the capsular contracture had probably started, and it had contracted so much that it changed the shape of them. And it was sort of from there that, like, yeah, they were just too hard to be boobs. Like, when I hugged people, I was so worried that I was, like, stabbing them with my chest.
Whack. Yeah, that's, like, I think I have the same thing, whereas, like, this one is the one with the contracture. It's higher than this one, I think, because obviously when they squeeze, they start to raise and, like, deform or whatever. And this one, I honestly feel like there's a rupture. Like, the shapes have just, and I feel like it must be happening slowly over time, but it's just like one day I woke up and they're completely different to what I remember them being. But it's just like, it's crazy. I'm like very much the same, where I used to look at them and be like, oh, I feel like such a woman. I feel so beautiful with them. And now I look at them and I'm like, honestly, I feel like repulsive. They don't feel like me.
Exactly.
One's like a rock. It's so hard. Like, it's not natural. The other one feels like a deflated balloon, or it feels like, you know, those, this is going to sound so bizarre, but you know, those like cold packs you keep in the freezer, like the squishy gel.
Yep.
It literally feels like you can feel the gel. Moving. And I'm like, that's not normal. That's not how boobs are supposed to feel. So I just feel like, I'm at the point now where even if I have these tiny little, one size bigger than the other, little pecs or whatever they are, I think because I know that they'll be mine, I probably will feel much better or find some peace with that, rather than waking up with these painful, hard, weird, alien-looking things on me.
Mm. Even if you were to get them replaced based on your history, I'm assuming that would happen again. Like,
I mean, I've been offered, if I wanted them replaced, I can have them replaced. But I just think with my history, like you said, and my body, looking back at like how quickly things were happening, I just think I have one of those bodies that like does not like, my immune system does not like any of this stuff.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't risk it. It's not worth it at all.
No, I've said it to people, like when I was 15, I had a perfectly healthy belly button piercing just grow out of nowhere. It wasn't infected or anything. It just grew out.
Yeah.
And then, had the implants. I've had surgical mesh as well around my ovary then the marina. And I just feel like they all overloaded my immune system. And, my body wanted to reject them all, but it was just adding more and more in over the years that made it so much worse. And I reckon it was like probably after the mesh that my BIR symptoms got worse. They were there, like just bubbling along, and then chuck some mesh in there. I don't know if that mesh is dissolvable, whether that's still there or not. But I look it up online. I've done an FOI request as well to get that information.
Oh, good on you.
I went through the public system to have that surgery done, and it was the same. Like, I didn't realize it was a thing, but I paid to see the specialist privately, and then he just booked me in at a public hospital. I'm like, oh, I normally go private, whatever. Like, you know, as long as the nurses are lovely, I don't care. And that was one of the best hospitals I've had a surgery in. Like, I did that request and I got the name of the mesh, but there's not a lot of information online about it, apart from someone writing a letter to the FDA in the US about their way it's impacted them negatively. And I'm like, okay, like, I think this is something I need to look into now. But
No, that's so interesting. I like, because I did the same thing. I don't know many women who have had the mesh for the implants, but I know recently in Australia, I'm not sure about America or other places, there have been a lot of reports about the Johnson & Johnson mesh, which I'm assuming is the one you've got.
A different one, but I know the one you're talking about. Mine's called Interseed or something like that. But Johnson & Johnson pelvic mesh is it's causing so many issues for women. Like, and even after it's been removed, it's causing them long-term problems. All the other implications it has on them, like they end up divorcing their husbands because they can't have intercourse anymore, or they have bladder issues. Like, you're hearing all of this and it's just heartbreaking, because they didn't know at the time. They thought they were fixing another medical problem.
No, exactly. And that's the thing, like, that's what makes me so sad about all of this. It's like, you don't know what you're kind of signing up for. And like the same thing with the mesh and all these women who've had it for like their pelvic injuries and things like that. You think you're doing a good thing to fix something, or you think it's what's the word? Well, you think it's safe because, you know, these are things frequently used. It's not like this is a new concept or, you know, something new on the market. These are things that have been around for a long time and you're told that they're safe. It's heartbreaking when you're doing this to fix an issue like a congenital defect or, you know, something like that. And then it just makes you sicker, or then you're experiencing problems because of that. You know, it's like these poor women, my God.
There'd be so many people that still don't know about these issues with these devices, or say like breast implants, whether it's breast implants or the mesh or like IUDs or whatever it is. There will be so many people walking around going, oh, this is just my life. Like, you know, I've just got this joint pain, or I'm just tired all the time. Like, this is just normal. But it's like, oh, like I just, you know, what can I do? Like, what wall can I paint that says, that tells people this?
No, like 100%. And I think, yeah, you just get used to a certain quality of life or a way of living for so long that you just accept it as normal. Or like, you know, especially for women, because generally, like, you know, we do so much. You know, women are primary caregivers. We, like, all the domestic labor that women do, the roles in which women do, the fact that they feel responsible for like their family a lot of the time. And so, you know, of course you're run down. Look at what you're doing. You're doing all this. So like when I was working two jobs, you know, and had managing a relationship at the time and then my dog and then trying to have a social life in there, like, of course I was needing naps all the time or needing to do all this stuff. And then I look back at it now and think like, no, I was, you know, when all this started, I was like in my 20s, like that, I should have had more energy. Well, you know, it's not normal. So, but we know now, and that's why, like, you know, we're talking about it, and there are people speaking up. But it's just, it is sad, because I still feel like I found out about this by chance. If my GP had said all that to me, and I hadn't, I think, heard it from a doctor, I still don't know that I would have believed it. So, yeah, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm. What have you, or will you do to prepare for your surgery? Like, we're a week and a half away at the moment of, like, at the moment right now as we're chatting. What sort of things are you doing in the lead up to it?
To be honest, like, physically, I'm just still not in a good way, that I can't really do much in the way of like exercise. And with all the food intolerances I now have, it's very hard diet wise as well. So I'm just trying to be really gentle and kind with myself and rest a lot, and take a lot of supplements, which I would usually be doing anyway, drinking lots of water, just giving myself that permission to like go slow, because this is a big thing that's going to happen and I'm going to need to like lots of time in recovery. So you know, it's important that I am gentle now, but also apart from that, just making sure I have like all my pajamas, everything packed beforehand. I got those pillows actually that you recommended. They're amazing.
Have they arrived yet?
Yeah, they're so good. Yeah, no, thank you so much for that, because it's so hard as well looking online, trying to, because I can't leave the house, so I have to do my shopping for this stuff online. You know, not knowing what you're going to get or the quality of something that's going to turn up. But no, they were like fantastic. So,
I still use the leg pillow now. Like, if I don't have it all night, it's when I first go to sleep. Like, having my feet elevated, my back just feels deluxe when I do that. Yeah. And I take both wedges with me if I go away somewhere, because I'm used to like a certain mattress at home. And if I sort of stay somewhere that, like, you know, a cabin or something, or even Airbnbs, like, they don't have the same mattress that I have. So I'll take those with me if it's a driving holiday, because I can sleep beautifully on those. They're huge and they take up like a big part of the car, but they're so comfortable.
They're like, yeah, they're amazing. Like, even my younger sister came over the day and she's pregnant, and she was just like, oh, you know, I might be borrowing those.
Oh, no, you won't.
No, thank you. They're fantastic. So, yeah, thank you for that.
No worries. It's all good. Was there anything else, like, preparation-wise?
I think that that's really it. I'm just like kind of releasing it all and letting that go and hoping for the best now. Like it's all out of my hands. So I'm trying not to overthink, but yeah, just I think I'm prepared as I probably will be.
Yeah. And when we were chatting before, you mentioned that you're kind of lying low a little bit because your immune system's not working sort of at its full potential. So you're not wanting to then catch anything and not being be able to have the surgery.
Yeah, that's probably the only other thing, being immune compromised. I'm just like very wary of not, because even something simple like, you know, someone having a cough or a sniffly nose, for me, that can impact me for weeks and debilitate me further. So I'm just being very mindful of not to let anyone come over or be in the company or presence of anyone as much as I would love to be, mm-hmm. Who might be sick because, yeah, I really can't put this off. So... Yeah, just being mindful. There.
Completely understand that for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there anything else that you would like to share with us or bring awareness to at all?
I think we've covered a lot of the stuff. The only thing that I would really just like to, what's the word I'm trying to think of? Thanks, brain fog. Good to have you. Just to make a note on is that I really, really wish that there would be more conversations around normality and being accepting of different body types for women. And I think we need to have more discussions about what normal is for a woman or what can still be feminine, you know. Had I have had those kind of discussions, I think, when I was younger, when all this first came about, or had some better role models around me, not my family, but just, you know, peers. Or, yeah, I don't think that this would have bothered me to the extent that it drove me to get surgery, because looking back, like, okay, yes, I didn't have the typical breasts that, you know, my family or other people had. But I think the reason that it bothered me so much is because I was subjected to, like yourself, like a lot of bullying, comments from like boyfriends at the time comparing me to other women and how, you know, I didn't look like them or things like that. And I think if people had been nicer about that kind of thing, or you know, someone had taken me aside to say, like, look, yeah, you don't look like your sisters, or you don't look like your mum, or you might not have these, but that doesn't make you less of a woman. You know, that's not the deciding factor in you being feminine. There are so many other things that you have going for you. You don't need to take, you know, put your body under such stress or take these risks in order to just be accepted. I just wonder if we had more of those conversations, like how many women would that save from going through this kind of thing? Because, basically losing 10 years of my life just to look a certain way or look good in a bikini, it's not worth it.
And not have the energy to go out anywhere in that bikini.
No, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And, or not be able to enjoy myself when I did have more of the energy. Like I probably couldn't last an hour down the beach or things like that, you know? That's the only thing I would say that I think that needs to change, but that's going to be an ongoing thing because, you know, that's a whole other conversation, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And like you were saying before, when we were chatting, before we hit record, that you've got like nieces and nephews, and like I do too. And I didn't realize I was doing this until I had a conversation with somebody, but a lot of the stuff that I compliment I've got a 4-year-old niece, like she's my little best mate. The other day she said, oh, you're my buddy, and she won't let me leave the house anymore. But like a lot of the things that I realize that I compliment her on are her intelligence and how kind she is to people and, you know, like who she is as a person. And I didn't realize I did that, but maybe that's my own subconscious way of paying that forward. Like,
yeah.
And like, no, there's this part of me that like so many people that I know don't know about this podcast. They don't know I've had this surgery. And there's part of me that wants those people that bullied me to hear about this, because then maybe they've all got children now. Like, you know, I'm not, yeah. I don't, the one guy that said to me,
you don't have boobs, you've got fat rolls tucked up into a bra in year eight, and just scarred me for life. Face tattoo, so I'm assuming he's been in prison. But like, you know, he's probably got children now, and like, if he could learn from that, that he then talks to his children about the way they talk to other people, like, you know, I've done my job. Like,
yeah. No, you're right. And like, I'm the same. Like, when I talk to my nephews, it's never about their appearance, or rarely. It's always about, oh, you're so funny, you're so smart, or did you make that, like, you're so clever, and like, it's never. So I don't know whether, again, like, that might be like a generational thing that's now changing in the way that, you know, we're raising our kids now, or the people around us. But yeah, I do think about that, and a lot of these people who made these comments, I doubt that they would even think about me or you, or remember,
no,
that they
have gone about their lives like nothing's happened.
Yeah. And yet we are like making these like drastic decisions and life altering decisions because something stuck with us or scarred us or created an insecurity that we've not been able to squash because of something silly that was, you know. I just, yeah, wish people would be more have more intention behind their words and think about the things that they say to each other. Like, we need to be more kind, I think.
Absolutely. So one final question, where can people follow along with your journey?
If people want to follow along, or feel free to also ask any questions if like anything that I've discussed with you has triggered something for them. I'm just on Instagram at Lauren May with a double Y and then an underscore at the end.
Beautiful. Cool. I'll put that in the show notes as well, so that's easy to find you.
Thank you. No. It was so like a chat with you, and like, I don't know, I'm always floored when I talk to like another woman who has experienced these same things, of just like how incredibly strong and amazing they are, and just like their compassion. Like, yeah, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. There is a big group of like amazing women out there, and like, you know, I'm the same. I'm floored by they can go through so much physical and emotional trauma through this, yet still be helping people. And it's like, you know, you're one of them as well, wanting that, you reached out to me to jump on and share your story in the episode. So, you know, like, hats off to both of us. Like, we're amazing. So thank you so much for being very real with us as well. Like, I appreciate the honesty, and, you know, people definitely need to hear how, it, you know, we're basically science experiments in choosing to have this surgery, because we don't know for sure whether it's going to fix these issues that we're having. And I'm really looking forward to hearing how the surgery goes for you, and, you know, hearing your updates, hopefully on future episodes as well.
Thank you. Definitely. Yeah. I will definitely let you know how I go, but, yeah, I'm sure we're just putting it out there. It's going to go well. Yeah, so
for sure.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Lauren. Bye.
This podcast shares my own experience and research. I'm not a medical or health professional. You can find me on Instagram at couldit_be_podcast. Thank you to my incredibly talented partner, Jacob Tengdahl, for the intro and outro music. All recording, editing, and artwork is done by me. Thank you for listening.